Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Good morning again, everyone. And as Richard mentioned in the news, over the weekend, while you were maybe picnicking or relaxing in general with your family, there was a mad legal scramble to keep one New York family together. Maybe you know the basics of the pizza delivery man, Pablo Villavicencio Calderon, who delivered some pie to the Fort Hamilton Army Base in Brooklyn on June 1st and found himself on the verge of being deported despite having no criminal record, despite being married to a U.S. citizen, and despite his pizza delivery work supporting two children born of that legal marriage in this country. It looked like the government was trying a rapid deportation that would have gotten Mr. Villavicencio sent back to Ecuador today. But over the weekend, while we were out playing with our families, a court hearing was convened and the deportation was stayed on Saturday afternoon until at least next month. This has become a cause célèbre that has brought Governor Cuomo, among others, out publicly on Pablo Villavicencio's side and raises fundamental issues about when it's right to break up law-abiding families, to stick to the letter of immigration law in the age of Jeff Sessions and Donald Trump. So with us now, Jennifer Williams, Deputy Attorney in Charge of the Immigration Law Unit at the Legal Aid Society. She was working over the weekend on this case and is nice enough to come into our studio this morning. And Walter Barrientos, Long Island Organizing Director from Make the Road New York. Jennifer and Walter, thanks for your time today. Welcome to WNYC.
All our pleasure. Thank you.
Jennifer, Mr. Villavicencio's deportation order does stem from 2010, I understand, when Barack Obama was president. Mm-hmm. So can you give us that background?
Yeah, so, he's a relatively new client of ours, so the facts are still developing, and we're still doing a deep dive into his procedural history, and he had two other private attorneys before we came on board. But our understanding is that he was placed in proceedings after he crossed the border. He had applied for asylum in the United States, and then he accepted a voluntary departure in 2010 and obviously failed to depart. So that's what
does that mean, accepted a voluntary departure?
Right. So basically, instead of going forward on his asylum application, he agreed and the government agreed that he could leave on his own accord at his own expense at a date certain. So that's, in essence, what voluntary departure means.
So he lied to the Immigration Service back then and went underground. That much he did, right?
I guess if you want to categorize it, that's certainly one way of viewing it, but he didn't depart.
And you say he was seeking asylum. Mm-hmm. He was seeking asylum in the United States from some kind of claimed oppression of him in Ecuador?
That's correct.
What was that? Do you know?
At this point, I can't really get into the specifics about his asylum case because, again, we're developing the facts as time goes on.
Okay. Now, Walter, you're here from the Long Island Make the Road New York group. He's a Long Islander. Is that why?
Yes. His family lives in Nassau County in Hempstead, one of the biggest Central American communities on Long Island.
And are there, tell us more about the Central American communities on Long Island for people who don't live in Nassau or Suffolk or haven't come in contact with people from those communities in those counties. A lot of other people don't realize that there would be a big immigrant community. They think of Long Island in old sort of white suburban Levittown, whatever kind of terms.
Sure. So just picking up from there, essentially, since the 80s, many Central American families like my own and increasingly now South American families are making Long Island home, mostly because of the huge growth in the urban sprawl of the island, where immigrants like my mom and my parents have had to have come in to fill in the gaps in a lot of domestic work, construction work, landscaping, but also increasingly in industries like the healthcare industry, not just in hospitals, but also home health aides and many others who are taking care of elderly and children on Long Island. So it's a large population. I think we're somewhere between 15 to 20% of the population. And we're very segregated. So places like Hempstead are some of the strongholds in the community. And that's where we're seeing the impact of these deportations, but also other things that this administration is doing, like ending the TPS program and DACA, which means that close to 20 to 40,000 Long Islanders will be dealing with this same situation as early as next year.
Right. And do you happen to know why he was seeking political asylum from Ecuador, what his situation was there politically?
I don't. Actually, we had not met them before. And much like his family, we are meeting them when they're dealing with the emergency once they realize that their case is no longer being considered or ICE has shown up to them. And this is exactly what's happening to hundreds of families like them, not just adults and parents, but also with many teenage children who have suddenly been labeled gang members.
And Jennifer, I read that when Mr. Villavicencio delivered the pizza to Fort Hamilton, two guards at the gate disagreed about whether to do an immigration background check on him. What's your understanding of what led to that dispute between the guards?
So the facts are still unfolding and developing, but it's my understanding that one civilian employee in particular was very alarmed that Mr. Villavicencio had showed a New York City ID card and was demanding some information about his status here in the United States and questioning why he did not have a Social Security number. And was relentless in his questioning of Pablo. And then at some point, they had made some phone calls, to my understanding, to the NYPD to see if he had a criminal warrant out for his arrest. And then they made a subsequent phone call to ICE.
And one of the guards, according to the New York Times, was crying when she had to inform his wife mm-hmm. of his detention. Do you know any more details of how that contact went?
Well, Pablo was no stranger to this particular army installation. In fact, he had made several deliveries to them on other prior occasions without incident, and in fact had made other deliveries to other army installations throughout the city and had never received such disparate treatment by any of the guards. Whenever a delivery man comes to the house, they just show a receipt and there's your food and off you go. And I think just this particular time, this one particular employee had it out for him.
It was an army base, so I guess they could argue that in the age of terrorism and lone wolf terrorists, they want to be as sure as they can that anybody coming into an army base has proper ID.
Yeah, which he did. He had his New York City ID.
And so this raises another issue. Do you learn from this incident that the New York City ID, which Mayor de Blasio had instituted, I think, very explicitly to help give a legal document to otherwise undocumented immigrants who cannot get driver's licenses in New York, which are the things that are generally, you know, accepted as universal IDs and, of course, wouldn't have Social Security card or passport. Do you learn from this that the New York City ID does not work, does not protect undocumented immigrants in the way in which it was intended?
Well, I'm sure there are other instances similar to this. Is it a red herring now if anyone shows their New York City ID that therefore there should be some status profiling? Absolutely not, because there are plenty of other people who are U.S. citizens, lawful permanent residents who have this card. It's alarming that became a red herring in this particular case.
Walter, do you have a take on the usefulness of the NYC ID, given this incident, I could imagine, where many other undocumented immigrants with the NYC ID will now be afraid to use it mm-hmm. because people will see it, law enforcement will see it as a flag of being undocumented rather than something that legitimizes them, or mm-hmm. kind of the opposite.
Yeah, and I think that's why we are working very hard to ensure that we set into practice other policies that will protect immigrants at the city and state level, because we have to ensure that we do not have rogue officers or policies in institutions like an army base or at our schools, where individuals will not have accountability in being able to harass immigrant families like this. So our experience and our strategy is to ensure that we have other protections. We think that this ID has protected many immigrants, including people in my own family, over the last few years, so they can identify themselves and go about their lives without being put in deportation like this. And we think that there need to be other policies that need to be put in place, especially things like driver's licenses, which still leave thousands of immigrant families around the state, particularly in suburban and rural areas, subject to this kind of discrimination at the hands of law enforcement or, frankly, any other agency where someone would come in contact with an agent.
You know that people on the other side of this will argue that that's akin to just having open borders. Because if anybody can come here or overstay illegally and then get a driver's license, which allows you access to so many things, then what's the point of having immigration laws?
Well, part of the issue, and I think to your earlier question, is that for immigrant families like my own, even, it is part of the process of adjusting our status that sometimes we have to end up without immigration status, that we have to stay after a deportation order, because many times that's the only way, with our broken immigration system as it's been now for decades, that's the only way you can adjust status. And that's why we're saying states and cities have to have other ways for people to identify themselves and protect themselves, while many times families like this family wait years for their applications to be processed. And in the meantime, they still have to be a family and provide for themselves. And having an ID actually only helps all of us. I think it helps law enforcement identify who people are. It helps us all get car insurance. It would lower interest rates, as it has done in California and other states. So I think having an identification is actually a win-win for law enforcement, for their communities, and for our economy.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the story of the pizza delivery man from Hempstead, Pablo Villavicencio Calderon, who delivered some pie to the Fort Hamilton Army Base in Brooklyn on June 1st and found himself on the verge of being deported. He was an undocumented immigrant. He is an undocumented immigrant who had applied for political asylum back early during the Obama administration, but then had agreed to not complete that application and go back to Ecuador, which he did not. So he was here undocumented, but he had no criminal record. He's married to a U.S. citizen. His pizza delivery work is supporting two children born of that legal marriage in this country. And the Legal Aid Society won a stay of deportation in a court proceeding Saturday over the weekend. They were doing that while you were doing whatever you were doing. And we're talking to Jennifer Williams from the Immigration Law Unit at the Legal Aid Society and Walter Barrientos, Long Island Organizing Director from Make the Road New York. And we can take a couple of phone calls if anybody has a story to tell or a question or a comment. 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. And Ali in Brooklyn, you're on WNYC. Thank you for calling in.
Brian, good morning. Long-time listener. I love your show. But these two guests are giving very bad rap to a lot of people that they're trying to come to this country legally. First of all, Ecuador, for past 25 years, their currency is dollar. You cannot apply for political asylum for Ecuador. Let me tell you the trick. I'm a migrant to this country. I came 40 years ago, went through the hell to get my paperwork in order. This is really bad rap that you allow people like these two individuals, which I don't know them and I'm not going to judge them, but the statements that are making is completely untrue. You cannot, what is happening when there's people coming from Central America and South America and subcontinent Asia, the lawyers, like the people that you have in your show right now, they tell them the best way to do is get the political asylum because you can stay up there. During President Obama administration, second term, and during the President Trump, they said, no way, this is garbage, because people like myself, that they're trying to bring their brother, which is highly educated person, standing in a line for 10 years, to go through the process, they raise the hell. We have to stop this nonsense.
So, Ali, you're saying that it disadvantages legal immigrants whose family members, let's say, are waiting in line, but the country isn't going to allow any more than X immigrants in any given year. And so the people who are, in effect, jumping the line, like you would see the man in this case, are actually disadvantaging people like perhaps your own relatives?
Exactly. Let me just tell you something. Political asylum has certain procedure. What did they do, this lawyer? They say, oh, file a political asylum. How can you do political asylum on a democracy in Ecuador? For past 25 years, Ecuador is the cleanest country in South America. They have a currency. Their currency is a dollar. Look, the U.S. dollar that we use, they use the U.S. dollar. I've been in their capitals many times. My point to you is this. This has to stop. And I support President Trump for all these things happening. There's nothing against immigrants. They're deporting Irish. They're deporting anybody that has come to this country, staying their visa, and looking for the loops. We have so many loops in immigration laws that
and
I'll spend 1 hour with you on this.
Thank you very much for your call. What about the point, Walter, that he brings up about Ecuador? Now, Ecuador has a leftist president who, you know, puts his thumb in the eye of the United States on many occasions. But Ali says, look, that's a democracy. That's an elected leader. And so what is this about a political asylum from Ecuador anyway? It was probably fake.
You know, I think it's important to clarify that what the listener was referring to was a family petition, and that's a separate process than what's happening with asylum. I think that's a critical clarification for everyone listening. I also think I happen to be married to an Ecuadorian, and I go to Ecuador a lot, and I'm also from Central America. And I can tell you that I think you cannot judge asylum cases just based on what you hear in the news. The reality is that organized crime and drug cartels are very strong and causing a lot of death in all of Central and South America. And so you cannot judge an individual or an entire country. There are individuals who are either in law enforcement there who are having to flee. People in government have had to flee, especially in rural areas throughout Central and South America. So I think that this brings up the other question of what are our criteria for asylum, because we continue to see more and more stories of people who have been denied asylum in the United States only to find a certain death within weeks. Just this past weekend, the story of a documented young person who was recently deported to Mexico, I think about 3 weeks ago, has died. And so I think that this brings up into question, this is what we're trying to avoid with this case, because we do not know, the listeners do not know all the details of Pablo's case, just like any other asylum seeker. And that is why we need to save their lives. We need to give every recourse in our system to protect these families.
And Jennifer, one of your claims in court over the weekend was that this gentleman was racially profiled,
yes.
Right?
Mm-hmm.
Why
Absolutely.
That?
You know, from what we're learning, again, the facts are developing. I think whether you want to call it racial profiling, ethnic profiling, or immigration status profiling, I see no other reason why the events unfolded the way that it did, but for those very reasons. And I just want to...
And I get that. I could imagine, and of course I couldn't prove this in court, but if I rode up to the Fort Hamilton military base to deliver a pizza and only showed a New York City ID and not a driver's license, that they probably wouldn't have stopped to do an immigration background check on me.
I would mm-hmm. say extremely unlikely.
So what happens next? Where is he now?
So he's still detained at Hudson County Correctional Facility. Today, I plan to supplement the stay of removal application that's pending before U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement. We have received tremendous outpouring support from many elected officials, Governor Cuomo, Mayor Bill de Blasio, Controller Stringer, Senator Gillibrand, Congresswoman Kathleen Rice, Nidia Velasquez, Congressman Hakeem Jeffries, Public Advocate Letitia James, New York Immigration Coalition, Make the Road, the Mayor's Office of Immigrant Affairs. Everyone is dropping everything to try to help us get Pablo home to see his family as soon as possible. So we're going to supplement the stay today, and then we're going to strategize about on next steps for the habeas that is still pending before the Southern District.
So he and you have to go back to court July 20th, I gather. Mm-hmm. What's the argument? for allowing him to stay in this country?
Well, two other legal, brilliant legal attorneys in my office argued the habeas over the weekend. But generally, the arguments include that his due process rights were here were violated.
Well, the habeas, that's mm-hmm. and the due process, I mean, that makes sense. Mm-hmm. They detained the guy on the basis of a background check as he was delivering pizza. And then if they were really trying to kick him out of the country almost instantly, like today, then the government hasn't shown cause yet.
Right.
But then once you get to that July 20th hearing, mm-hmm. where presumably both sides will have to present their evidence on his underlying status, mm-hmm. and he did violate his voluntary deportation agreement, what's your argument for letting him stay in the country permanently?
Right. So, you know, the immigration law is extraordinarily complicated, but the INA, which is the Immigration and Nationality Act, doesn't condemn people from who are here in the United States unlawfully and even under final orders of removal to permit what sometimes is permanent separation from their U.S. citizen spouses and children. Instead, they promulgated regulations back in 2013 and 2016 to, you know, once they've recognized this extreme hardship that it imposed on families when they had to travel abroad to consular process through a green card, that the separation could be for a year or more. So this has already been contemplated, and this has already been hashed out, and everyone recognized that this is a very important avenue for those who are in fact here unlawfully and actually under final orders of removal.
All right. Well, we will see what happens in the now cause celeb case with all those politicians that you just cited weighing in on his side of Pablo Villavicencio Calderon, who delivered some pizza to the Fort Hamilton Army Base in Brooklyn on June 1st. And though he's not being deported today, as was maybe going to be the case, he is in detention.
Yes.
And separated from his family, his wife and two kids, who are all American citizens and not working and bringing home the bacon from the pepperoni top pizza. So that story goes on. Jennifer Williams, deputy attorney in charge of the Immigration Law Unit at the Legal Aid Society, and Walter Barrientos, Long Island organizing director from Make the Road New York. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Stay with us.